Hello, Tiger Nation. I am Byron Hulsey, headmaster at Woodbury Forest School, and I would like to welcome you to the Woodbury podcast series. This podcast consists of informal yet substantive conversations with alumni, faculty, staff, and students. The conversations explore how Woodbury's core values empowered alumni to build a solid foundation for their lives, how those core values are taught today by Woodbury teachers, and how those values are put into practice by today's students. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy.
Well, good afternoon, Tiger Nation, and welcome to the Woodbury Podcast. I'm delighted today to be joined by Danielle Kuhn, who is our director of the Student Store. And in her time at Woodbury, the Student Store has flourished and become a real hub of activity for the boys, for the faculty, for the staff, and certainly for parents and alumni when they're visiting the campus. Danielle, thanks for joining us on the podcast today, and we're looking forward to the conversation. So thanks very much.
Thank you. It's an honor.
All right. Well, Danielle, tell us a little bit about you. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Woodbridge, Virginia, so yeah. Northern Virginia. I'm one of nine children.
So wow.
So I'm the second oldest of nine.
Oldest.
Yeah. Growing up, you know, we were at church every Sunday. Yeah. We were Catholic. Uh-huh. My sister and I loved being in the choir.
Uh-huh.
I have so many memories of learning to put the robe on, tying the rope.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. But we kind of grew out of that area in Virginia.
Yeah.
Got a little too big for that area. My mom really always had this dream of living on her family's land in Summerduck. So she always talked about wanting to have a farm and wanting to leave Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
So when I was in the seventh grade, or right before the seventh grade, we moved to Rapidan.
Oh.
So that was kind of this middle area where my aunt and uncle, I don't know if you're familiar, but they owned the Rapidan Trading Post.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they owned that for a long time, operated it as a store. We moved into the apartments above the building,
uh-huh.
which was a lot of
wow.
fun at the time because my sister and I got our own apartment. That building is from the 1800s, similar to a lot of these buildings where it had a lot of character and it was a lot of fun. And it was very different. I remember at the time my dad, you know, he worked he was deputy sheriff in Fairfax. So he made the commute for a bit. He was coming close to his retirement from there. But it was a whirlwind. So we kind of uprooted our life from Northern Virginia, moved to Rapidan. Very different. Very different. Yeah. Even then, we would spend a lot of our days going down to the river, swimming right by the dam. I got my first leech.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, so we definitely, but it was a lot of fun. We spent a lot of our time outside, which we didn't, you know, get the same kind of freedom when we were in Woodbridge. We, you know, always rode our bikes around and we did everything that we could outside. And then I remember starting middle school at Culpeper, which is where I went. And I remember thinking from the jump that it's very strange, very different feeling because I was in a huge school in Woodbridge and middle school actually started in the sixth grade there. And then I came in at the seventh grade and that was everybody's first year in middle school.
So
I felt like I had an age. I was like, I know how to go from class to class. I know lockers. I know this. But I was a very shy kid. So it took me a while to open up. And I remember the first day, somebody in my class who is still one of my best friends, she looked at me and she was like, we're going to be partners on this project. And I was like, oh, thank God somebody picked me because I would have been too scared to. And she was also new that year. So we just bonded. And I really did love my time there. I found that anything music related, I joined the band. I played violin. I did anything I could from a music standpoint and then started to get really into sports. So I loved soccer. At the time, Culpeper only had one middle school and one high school. So even though Culpeper is a pretty big area, you got to know so many people. I think my graduating class was between 400 or 500 people. It was a very large group. So through the years, I found myself really being drawn to music. So any music class, I remember in high school, I was in marching band, wind ensemble, concert band, anything I do. I even took classical guitar for every year I could there. So it was a lot of fun. And I didn't quite know what life looked like after that. And I think that, you know, coming from a very blue collar, large family, I didn't know what it looked like after high school. But I knew I wanted to go out and do it. So the kind of caveat of having a large family is you don't experience as much as you would. We didn't really leave our bubble too much. I was joking with somebody the other day. It's like, I have this memory of growing up and we all couldn't fit in a car.
Yeah.
Right. So like there are complications to where vacations very much were camping. And I love a lot of those memories. But I think that going into the world, I kind of had this very sheltered view, but I knew I wanted to go do something. I just didn't know what it was. So it was hard to kind of commit to what that looks like. My sister was at Tech, and I thought, you know, let me go to the New River Community College down there. And I was like, and then I can just get my, I can figure out what's next. I moved down with her. We became roommates. We got an apartment together. I moved out when I was 17 and just graduated high school, and it was great. But before that, I had a couple club mentalities in my mind where I was trying to pull from a lot of that. I was in the Ruatan Club. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
So Ruatan, Ruatine. I was in 4-H. I had really, that's how I got money to move out right out of high school, is I won grand champion with my steer that year.
Had
4-H? Yeah, I had I'd never done anything related to 4-H in my life until I was a senior in high school. And yeah. My steer won grand champion. I was like, this is great. I'm going to move out.
And how much value did that give you?
I want to say that at the time, it was maybe around $1,500.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like a lot.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm living large. I'm moving out. I'm getting an apartment. It was great. So I, you know, just moved and hit the ground running. I immediately remember, I have to get a job right now. I need to be working. I need to pay for my half of rent. You know, I was already signed up for my classes.
Quickly, what was your work?
So the first work I got, and this is probably going to date me, but I remember minimum wage at the time was $5.65 or something back then. It was in the $5 range. And it's just hard to even remember that time because we're talking maybe like 2003, right? And I was going all around, and the first person to take a moment to talk to me when I asked for an application was Arby's down in, you know, Christiansburg, which is right outside Blacksburg. And on the spot, he said, I will pay you $7.25 if you can start working tomorrow. I said, yes, I'll take it. So I was like, I'm rich. This is great. I'm making more than minimum wage. And that was great. Within 2 months, I was promoted to be a shift leader.
Wow.
Had just turned 18. He was like, great. Here are the keys to the store. You got this.
That's awesome.
I know. It was just
how long did you work at the Arby's?
It was probably only a year or so. I became the opening manager there. So I would go in and do the prep. And at the time, oddly enough, I was a vegetarian because I was so hurt by having to auction my steer off to be butchered at the end of 4-H. It really affected me. So I was like, I'm not going to eat meat again, my poor Bubba.
You're a vegetarian working for Arby's.
Yes, it was very interesting. In the walk-in cooler, I would have my box of cereal and my milk, and I would eat breakfast in the morning by myself while I'm doing prep and do homework at the same time. It was a wild time, but it was great. I got to meet a lot of people. That was really kind of my first experience with having a proper job, right? So this is my checklist. This is what I do. And I took it very seriously because if anything, for my childhood, I was raised to do things the right way. And what I mean by that is if you are tasked with doing the dishes, you're not just doing the dishes, you're wiping the counters, you're sweeping the floor. Like there's steps to every goal, right? And I think that experience working with so many different varieties of people was great. With that, I got a part-time job at American Eagle Outfitters, which is ultimately what shaped my life and where I ended up falling in love with retail. Because at that time, I had never even shopped there because you know, when we did our back to school shopping, it was hand-me-downs. It was, we didn't really have the money. So when I started working there, it was great. It was so much fun. Like, I loved the people.
It was American Eagle Outfitters. Is that also in Christiansburg?
It was, yeah. So Christiansburg is really, at the time that I lived there, at this time, where a lot of the chains were. So once you got into Blacksburg, it was more of their kind of local eateries and stuff like that. But I juggled doing both for a little bit and going to school, and that kind of spiraled out of control very quickly. So ultimately I left Arby's because I just really enjoyed working at American. I feel like I was with my peers. I loved the music. I loved everything about it, really. And
that was your first, as you say, your first foray into retail. So
yeah.
Fast forward some for me, when I got to know you, I think Kenny Dane introduced us, and you were still working in retail, but in a pretty elevated position in Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that role and why you became interested in Woodbury.
Yeah. Yeah, I spent a lot of time, like I said, American Eagle really taught me my leadership skills, and I was there for many years. Ultimately, our Charlottesville location, we were testing a new concept. We were testing being as close to a campus as possible. I think that the shift for me was really kind of that post-COVID where everybody, I feel it was a common story for people to really evaluate how you're spending your time. Because here I am now at that time, I have two young kids.
Yeah.
I'm working a lot. And and working holidays, birthdays, it's draining, it's hard.
Yeah.
So I think at that moment, I originally moved out of the spotlight of a Tyson's Corner or high volume, high pressure store and took Charlottesville. Because at the time it was in Little Fashion Square Mall. It was not a big kind of spotlight store. And I wanted to start to step back. Because once I decided I don't want to be a multi-level manager, I don't want to run a district, I don't want to run a region, I want to be at home for dinner time, right? So once that shift kind of happened for me, I tried to take a step back. But, you know, it's a blessing and a curse that I had such a great reputation that they handpicked that store to do this because that's where I was and I knew it could be trusted. So that kind of thrusted me back into this high-pressure spotlight that I was trying to step back from. So I started kind of looking what's available, what would be the next change, and nothing really felt right. And I remember seeing Woodbury and remembering back to my Rapidan days of seeing the sign and knowing that there was a school somewhere around here that was called Woodbury Forest School. I had never been. But it was always, I just remember the road signs living out here.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to Kenny the first time and kind of going through, and he was asking me those original questions. I was like, honestly, it's going to take a lot for me to leave. I know that it's best for me and my family and my health to not do this job that I was doing anymore. I can't handle the level of stress long-term anymore. And what it would take for me to leave, I'm not totally sure. I think that it was kind of a mixture of when I came for the interview and I saw, I think when a lot of people see the campus for the first time and I'm meeting people and kind of hearing the stories, and I did a lot of research online about what people say in general about Woodbury and try to see, once you're in that high pressure kind of corporate environment, it's hard to understand how other places function because you're so used to this level of execution that it's hard to imagine how other people go through about their day.
Woodbury is pretty different.
It's very different. And I think that even I'm almost 3 years in at this point, and it's still a learning process. The whole first 6 months of me being here, anytime I took over a new store, I did anything that required a lot of change, it's so important to not try to get in right away on first day saying, this is all wrong, we're changing this. You have to observe what's happening, because I don't think anybody shows up to work or their job with the intention of doing a bad job.
No.
right? So it's important to always have respect when you're approaching something that you think you could maybe do it differently. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's approached as this is the better way to do it, but I think to have tact and respect when you're approaching any of those change. So immediately when I came for the interview and Kenny walked me through and I met the team at the store here and I saw the store, visually I'm very groomed when it comes to merchandising and presentation and things like that. So you always kind of see those things that, well, I would do this, right? But I think I was really excited about the idea of learning something new, because you get to a point when you do something for so long and you feel very skilled at it, you want a challenge. So I was really going back and forth with, I want a challenge, but I also want work-life balance. I believe that the two things can match. I just wasn't finding that. And I have a lot of respect and love for my previous work and everything that I did, but I just couldn't do it anymore.
Understandable.
Right. And I think that one of the thoughts that I kept going back to is through my career, something I've always been very passionate about is people development. So I had 30 people promoted from underneath me to higher leadership roles. I took it very seriously. I think that, you know, whether somebody's scrubbing a baseboard or they're at a board meeting, I think approaching the hard work and everybody doing the hard work is so important. I loved building careers or helping people find their passion. I worked in so many stores across Virginia, and my goal whenever I left one store and moved to the next one was to build the strongest team possible and get them in the role that they want. So the Richmond market is a market that I was in for a while, as well as Northern Virginia. I left the Richmond market. At that point, we had 5 stores, and they all had their own individual store teams. Every store leader in that market had been my assistant manager that I hired, I trained, promoted, helped them build their team. And then you get to a point where you're like, okay, I did the work here. You guys are ready to do this. I'm moving on. And at the time, I was in talks to move to Manhattan. We were opening our Times Square store. And I originally was interviewing to be a merchant manager because, again, this is around 2008. We all know the economy at that point, it was hard. And I had never worked in a store where I didn't comp myself. So it's always growth, 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 growth. And 2008 happens and I didn't comp. And I was like, oof. So many lessons were learned during this period, right? How to be a leader when you feel like you're failing, yeah. Right? How do you still lead a team, keep positive, stay open-minded, keep, right? And they're not good. And there's, you have to learn to get past that or, throughout the years, being able to coach upwards. So sometimes you get somebody that is now your boss and you feel that they're not approaching things right. How do you coach to that when they're above you, right? And there's a lot of lessons that were learned through that. And I remember when they flew me to Pittsburgh to the home office to interview and meet for Manhattan, right? And at the time, yeah, I'm going to do this. I can do this. And as it got more and more real, I was like, oof, oh gosh, where do I live? Where am I going to live? how can I do this? And I definitely got cold feet, but to even be considered or offered any of those positions was so amazing. And it kind of morphed itself into moving to North Virginia and taking on Tyson's, which just kind of was always the problem store. Nobody could ever quite get it right. Big opportunity, high turnover, all of the negative stats, like they would have the same traffic as a much lower volume store. So the company just sees potential. Coming from that world of where everything is so numerical and so analyzed and you're just like so driven, it's just you constantly have this beating heart of, okay, I've got to do better, to take it here to where the amount of meetings when I started here where Kenny would just be like, ooh, calm down. Like it's Let's just take it a little bit at a time.
So Woodbury took some of the steam out of that battle.
But it felt good in a way that I was involved. The process was mine, yeah. Right? So in my previous job, I was an executor of somebody else's plan. It gets passed out, right? You build the plan and you can execute it. And still, at the time when I came here, the store team was two. It was the store manager and Amanda, who is still here. And for me, it's just, okay, how can we do this good, better, best? I feel like anybody in business knows that's kind of a really great place to start. Like, if we're at a good place, let's get it a little bit better. And then what ultimately, to your point, what's the goal? What's the end goal here? So immediately I started kind of questioning in my mind the operations. So the store, there's a want online. We technically have a website. How can we do that better? We have such a strong alumni group that also wants Woodbury gear. So it's little things where it's just, okay, let's start doing some research. And that's what took me to visit some other store directors or store managers. So very quickly, I started networking with April Washburn from Washington & Lee. Her store has a great reputation, and she was so gracious. She spent a whole day with just me, walked me through their whole process. I met their team. I saw their store. We're still really great partners. And something that happened from that moment is we joined a buying association for other bookstores. So a lot of collegiate stores, a lot of universities, and some other boarding schools. So through that process over the last couple of years, we've been able to take, you know, my previous experience and knowledge around merchandising or buying and different aspects of that with now this, interpret that in this lens. So how does it work in a boarding school? How does it work in a college bookstore? And we've been able to network with other boarding schools, which has been a lot of fun. I've had a lot of schools reach out to us and say, hey, we follow you on Instagram, or we like what you've done, or all of our students say, why can't our store be like Woodbury store? I'm like, that is the best compliment. I love that, because I'm also very competitive. So it kind of turns into these mentorship relationships that I felt April gave me from Washington & Lee, which is amazing. And now we're able to help a lot of other schools on their journey to make their overall client happy, right? So their students, their alumni.
So Danielle, tell us a little bit about, if you had to choose, I know you probably have many more, three. If you had to choose, say, three goals that have really formed and shaped your work in the store, what would they be? Like the biggest goals?
Yeah. I want to continue to see growth through the employee standpoint. So we started hiring boys to work for the store, and that's been...
How many boys are...
So we have 15 right now. Wow. Yeah. So I love the growth so far, but I think there's more that we can do also. So
where's
they find us? We have really great loyal customers. What I've been doing is every summer when I'm ready to start vetting the new group, I'll send out an email. And I've gotten better at my requirements each year we've done this. So last summer, I basically just said, if you're interested in working for us, send me a paragraph. Tell me why. Yeah. Put some thought into it, because this is going to determine if we have an in-person meeting. And it was very eye-opening to see how in-depth some of the boys were. I mean, it was incredible. I think that some of them were the emails I got. I would forward them to Amanda and be like, oh, my gosh, look at this email. About why they want to work for the store, what they think they could bring, and why they care about the community in general. It's been a lot of fun. But other than that, we kind of meet, and one of the main things that I'm looking for in the boys is, how do they function with their time management? How do they keep on top of their academics? Are they in good standing? What does their advisor say about them? So we don't want to add stress to anybody. Yeah. I think it's a great opportunity for a lot of these boys who are ultimately potentially making it out of high school not having a job, which I can relate to that, because that's the situation I was in, where I try to think back of, if I had had somebody teach me what I need to know about a job, the fundamentals, like, what would that have done for me? So I try to give that to them, like the why we do things, not just, okay, we're going to do this today, but why are we doing these things? Why are they important? And so far, every year we've had student employees, we've gotten better at it. They've gotten better. We have tested them doing some of their activity time, and that has allowed us to support shifts in the post office, delivering meals to the infirmary, the fir tree. So as we continue to staff using students, we can cycle it back into how can they support the community in these different ways and also get to know the staff. I think that's a really big part of it too. And
Woodbury staff.
Yeah. And it's been really great to see those relationships and level of respect amongst.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That means a lot.
So I guess that was only one. You asked me three, but.
What's the second?
Because
you're in the black now.
I know. That's what I was. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Pressure's on.
Added on the store.
I know. Oh, gosh.
So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that was hard.
It was
hard to climb that mountain.
I think that it's hard for me to think of a scenario where we wouldn't be, because I think that I'm just so analytical. That will never break in me, I don't think. Like, if it's something, and I just obsessively analyze all of those numbers, and that's where we've been able to really identify which vendors produce the best results for us. What does it match up with what everybody's asking us for? I think one of... whenever we run out, it's a bad day. But we have done great things on campus when it comes to the efficiencies of, like, something as simple as the vending machines. You know, when you're talking about 400 boys that live here and they're not going into town to get stuff, they do get snack attacks and they want to get their drinks and their snacks. So I think we can do better, have done better, but there's still growth within that. One of the big projects that I am excited about, we have started, is we want to grow our presence when it comes to golf. So Woodbury obviously has a lot of our boys and our faculty that play golf, but we have golf members as well. So we've been working on getting an account with Titleist to be able to have, you know, my ideal scenario is if we had sets of clubs and different stuff that an alumni can come into town, they can rent, they don't have to ship their own clubs, they don't have to travel with them, they can, you know, take advantage of all of that here right on campus with us. So I'm excited. The problem is I don't know anything about golf, so it's going to be a summer project, but Amanda and I are really pumped about it. We want to get to know the game more. We have joked, Mac Edwards, like, somebody needs to teach us. Like, we need to learn from the best while they're here. So that's the ultimate goal. I want to be able to, probably by next school year, have that more in line, because we do have a lot of boys that also ask if we have clubs for rent or, you know, things like that. Where when I hear questions come up more than once or twice, I always kind of jot them down and come back to them and see how much they're circulating. And it seems like golf is something where we're, in general, passionate about here at Woodbury, and we need to educate ourselves a little more.
So clearly continuing to grow revenue.
Yes, of course, always.
And really, really good in that area and doing that through a lot of different things. What about a third goal?
I think for me, the third would probably be more on a personal level. Again, it kind of goes back to my passion around people management. I really always enjoy that. So however that works in my life here, I find that you know, we were able to add a position to the store of assistant manager, which we promoted Amanda into. Yep. I take development very seriously when it comes to career, or, you know, I believe that people should always advocate for what they want from a position standpoint, and really do everything they can to get to that place. So we're a much smaller scale, but I think that anywhere that there's growth for me or the store from a people development standpoint. And I find that the boys working in the store also kind of help with that process, to where then we end up having kind of leadership roles within the store and the boys where somebody's trusted to maybe work on a Saturday, be here alone, and eventually be able to open the store on, let's say, a Sunday where Amanda and I would be off. Wouldn't that be great, right? Like if there's a guy that wants to open the store for 2 hours from 12 to 2 or whatever the case is. I think that the more we can make the store accessible to everybody that's here, I think that's the best thing to do. So we're going to continue to kind of grow that. But, you know, and I think when I think of that, I think this year, you know, Joseph Stovall has been amazing for us. And even last year, he helped us so much during the game and the Friday before. And there's always those guys that they want to do anything they can to help. And we find that a lot in the boys that we end up hiring. So I've got to believe that it's just a culture where so many of them are that way here, which is a little different than maybe what I had been used to in my previous experience from a staffing standpoint, is that you have that eagerness to always show up, always help, which is really great.
So just a couple of little tidbit questions to close down here. 9 o'clock in the morning, that seems to be a time where the staff has its own snack attack. What are they, what are they buying? What are their key go-to items?
Chips. Soda. Those are the main. The main Patrick, ones. He loves his Snickers. But yeah, we have different times of day. But yeah, that 9 a.m. is our rush. Chips are definitely the top on the list there.
Interesting. And so, and the boys, when they have a snack attack, what are they getting? How's that same, similar to?
Oh, man. I guess it kind of depends on how intense their activities are that day from a sports standpoint. So they love an afternoon rush, which is kind of either right before or right after their athletics. They love the Propels, kind of like the body armor drinks, recovery. Protein bars are great that time of day. They love jerky, the stick form, bag form. They love all the jerky. Chips still for them. We love a chip here at Woodbury. And then as far as faculty, the Diet Dr. Pepper is, I'm telling you, that's where it's at. Yeah, it's true. Warm days, they love the ice cream. Fridays are always our big snack day where, you know, most boys walk out with a bag, right? They've got their big sharing size. Yeah, the sharing size of chips. They've got normally an ice cream, stuff to get them through. So that's what always makes me think that, okay, we're open on Saturday now, but if we were able to work out being open on Sunday, they would feel less frantic about getting that Friday rush in. But
so is Kenny Dean encouraging you to jack prices up or keep them?
Oh gosh, no. He's really gracious. He's great. I feel.
Do you have to answer the question?
No, he is not. He doesn't get into any of my business really. And a lot of times when I've worked myself up.
He's known very well.
I know he is, and I think sometimes he gets a bad rap about that. But it's true. It's true. It's true. No, he's good. There's definitely have been some things over the years here now where I really question the margin. I'm like, why is this price this way? Because we're taking a loss or it's really close. And he's like, oh, no, you can't. So sodas, for example, right? It's no secret. Everyone's been dealing with inflation over time to where they're over the past 2 to 3 years since I've been here, we've had to slowly inch the soda up. And I assure him, like, listen, I'm going to Food Lion. I'm price checking. We're still lower than any of the local places around here, but we can't sell these for less than we're buying them for, right? I was like, I can't win. But there's definitely
makes total sense.
Yeah. So we do have some conversations when it comes to that stuff of what it's okay to be flat on, what we want to make on, because there are, you know, some companies and brands where the margin is so great that it gives us a cushion for other stuff.
Kenny stays away from those brands.
Yes, so it's true. He does. Yes, it's very true. Yeah, he's like, no. Yes.
He's careful. Okay, so one thing that that our listeners may not know, because it's true, we've got some really high-end stuff in the store right now. It's great. But you're also conscious of folks who might not be able to afford that. And so what steps are you taking to make some, you know, your product as affordable as it can be for more people?
Yeah. So last year we invested in an embroidery machine, which has been great, but it also meant that I needed to learn how to use an embroidery machine. So I did a lot of YouTubing and figuring out how to use this machine that I picked up, and it's worked out. I've gotten pretty good at it, but my ultimate dream with that was for anything that we're bringing in that's maybe too high of a price point, or if I think there's no way I would have been able to buy this when if I were here. I try to find where I can sell things for under $15. So for example, we have accounts with all kinds of vendors that we work with, but I'm able to buy blank items and then those items embroider them ourselves and not put that markup on the goods for people to where that's viewed as this is the service that we're doing to sell this as low as possible. So we always try to balance if we're bringing in a Peter Millar polo, what other polo do we have under this price point that we can source, right, really, and balance it.
Personally, I really appreciate that. I think that even if we were making more money by selling higher-end product exclusively, I think it would do what I forgot.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Effort to provide a range there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, using different vendors allows us to purchase in a different way to where we can really diversify what we're buying and not have to bulk buy as much of certain things to where we can find items that we can get a really good deal on. And they're kind of a one and done. Like, we're not going to reorder this, but I was able to buy this gray hoodie at a really great rate from our vendor. So we're able to sell it for a really great rate. So we do work with them a lot. In that case, yeah, and we love our sale rack. You know, when the inventory, when the size run breaks, or we can't reorder something, and we don't have any more larges or mediums, or vice versa, we don't have any more extra large or small. That's normally when we decide to slice the price and sell it on clearance. So we always have that online. Also, we try to sell as many things as possible online because it's great.
Well, whatever you're doing is working.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, the results speak for themselves. And
thank you.
After. So, Danielle, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Woodbury Podcast. We hope you found our discussion insightful and engaging. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing, rating, or leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. Stay tuned for more conversations in the future. And remember, the conversation doesn't have to end here. Connect with us on Woodbury Forest School social media, reach out with your questions or comments, and let's keep the dialogue going. Until next time, take care and go Tigers!